Welcome to Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Ashley Chan. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Alexey Danilov, MD, PhD, about current challenges and emerging treatment approaches for the management of leukemia and lymphoma that were published in a manuscript based on proceedings from the inaugural Bridging the Gaps in Leukemia, Lymphoma, and Multiple Myeloma Conference. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Danilov highlighted recent advances and controversies in the treatment of select patients with hematologic malignancies. He noted chemotherapy-free regimens that are shifting treatment paradigms in mantle cell lymphoma, preferred and emerging BTK inhibitors for the management of chronic lymphocytic leukemia, and the evolution of CD19-directed CAR T-cell therapies for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. Dr. Danilov concluded by taking a forward glance at future developments like BTK degraders and novel CAR T-cell therapy targets. So thank you so much for speaking with me today. We're going to be discussing bridging the gaps in leukemia, lymphoma, and multiple myeloma. So first, can you briefly highlight the importance of publishing this manuscript from this bridging the gaps in leukemia, lymphoma, and multiple myeloma?
This manuscript summarizes the key findings of the meeting of experts in three respective fields, leukemia, lymphoma, and multiple myeloma, who discussed and highlighted some of the advances in these key respective areas, as well as unmet needs and unanswered questions. We do have guidelines published by different entities in all these respective fields, such as NCCN guidelines. However, these guidelines mostly focus on treatment approaches using diagnostic and treatment approaches in each disease using evidence that already exists and don't necessarily discuss the controversies that exist in this current area, in these different areas, and which physicians face on a daily basis in their clinical practice. So in this meeting, we did discuss some of these controversies and the solutions which we propose, at least at this time, and how to approach resolution of these controversies in the future.
Well, first, focusing on MCL, how have chemotherapy-free regimens affected earlier lines of treatment?
So chemotherapy-free regimens have begun to shift treatment paradigm in patients with mantle cell lymphoma. As you know, chemoimmunotherapy has been a standard for a long time, and autologous stem cell transplant has been used for a long time in patients with MCL as well. But building on recent advances, such as triangle study, cooperative group studies, as well as smaller studies which demonstrate good efficacy of chemoimmunotherapy-free regimens, as well as question the role of autologous stem cell transplant, there's been a slow but steady shift in favor of these therapies. And so far, there is limited information in terms of how chemo-free regimens perform in comparison with standard chemoimmunotherapy regimens that we are used to. Enrich trial, for example, did demonstrate that there may be some superiority of ibrutinib-based therapy over chemoimmunotherapy. However, that was mostly limited to R-CHOP therapy in the control arm, which is not our standard in treatment of frontline mantle cell lymphoma, whereas the difference with bendamustine rituximab, which was also included in the control arm, was not so significant. But there are many studies ongoing now, both smaller phase twos, as well as randomized phase three studies, which are either being planned or are currently enrolling, which evaluate the role of chemo-free regimens in patients with previously untreated mantle cell lymphoma. And while we see a lot of use of chemotherapy still in the community in MCL, I will say that there is an increased use of BTK inhibitor-based regimens as well in frontline therapy, particularly in patients who have difficult-to-treat mantle cell lymphoma, such as patients with mutations in P53 gene who do not respond well to chemotherapy. Bovin regimen has been listed in NCCN guidelines for such patients now, and we do see increased use of this regimen. However, we also now know that BTK inhibitors are not a full answer for patients with high-risk MCL, and therefore new studies are needed employing, say, immunotherapy agents such as bispecific antibodies in frontline therapy of MCL to understand what is the best approach to treat these patients. So this is an evolving field, and in general, the whole group of experts has been leaning towards use of chemo-free regimens and earlier lines of therapy in MCL, anticipating better outcomes over time. But of course, this needs to be studied in a randomized fashion.
In your practice, how do you approach treatment for patients with high-risk MCL?
Yeah, so I strongly believe that these patients should not get chemoimmunotherapy, even though bendamustine rituximab still remains an option listed in NCCN guidelines, for example. I do believe that the clinical trial is the best option for those patients. And luckily, we do have access to such trials at our site. For example, we have a trial called GLOVE, which is a combination of glofitamab, venetoclax, and lenalidomide with obinutuzumab pretreatment prior to glofitamab. So that's why GLOVE. And this trial is specifically designed for such patients. So it enrolled only patients with high-risk mantle cell lymphoma, including patients with P53 abnormalities. In absence of trials, I do believe that Bovin regimen is a good approach. It has demonstrated efficacy in these patients. Although it is a smaller study, and maybe it would be nice to get confirmation of this data from a smaller study in a larger patient population, or even single agent BTK inhibitor, potentially with additional venetoclax as well, is an approach that can be taken with or without rituximab. But I do believe that we potentially doing a disservice to these patients by using chemotherapy in frontline and promoting chromosomal instability that those patients have and promoting acquisition of new resistant mutations. And certainly autologous stem cell transplant does not play a role in these patients at all.
Now, moving on to CLL, what are some considerations before selecting an appropriate BTK inhibitor, and what are some of the clinical implications here?
Yeah, so in CLL, there's been certainly a lot of advances in the past 10 years. This is one field, this is one disease where chemoimmunotherapy has been essentially eliminated from armamentarium with very rare exceptions. I believe this is where mantle cell lymphoma is heading as well, by the way. So mantle cell lymphoma is sort of trying to become CLL, but this already happened in CLL. And in frontline setting, we typically choose between time-limited regimens such as venetoclax, obinutuzumab, or like you mentioned, a single agent BTK inhibitor. And there are three BTK inhibitors currently approved, ibrutinib, acalabrutinib, and zanubrutinib. I will say that in my practice and talking to my colleagues who were at this meeting, certainly ibrutinib has not been used as much anymore, given the randomized study data demonstrating better efficacy of zanubrutinib and acalabrutinib. So selective BTK inhibition with zanubrutinib and acalabrutinib is certainly the way to go. And there hasn't necessarily been a consensus that one of those agents is better than the other. I think there is now a third consideration where we have seen exciting data from Amplify study, which introduced the combination of acalabrutinib and venetoclax and acalabrutinib, venetoclax, obinutuzumab triplet and frontline therapy of CLL. So those regimens have not yet been approved. However, they are now being included in guidelines. So I have successfully used those regimens off clinical trial. And I do believe that they will find common use in patients with CLL in frontline therapy. And of course, acalabrutinib is part of that regimen. So we will see how that affects use of other drugs. Although there is certainly now emerging data with the combination of zanubrutinib and venetoclax, zanubrutinib and sonrotoclax, an alternative BCL2 inhibitor. So I think in the next few years, we will have an even expanded armamentarium for treatment of CLL.
How has the FDA approval of liso-cel in CLL affected treatment selection for patients who are double refractory?
Yeah, so this is certainly a welcome development in therapy of CLL. Double refractory patients, meaning patients who are refractory to BTK inhibitors and BCL2 inhibitor venetoclax or alternative BCL2 inhibitors, is an unmet patient unmet medical need. This is a patient population where approvals so far very limited, and information is still limited on how these patients do with new therapies. And we do currently have a non-covalent BTK inhibitor, pirtobrutinib, which is approved in that setting. We also have liso-cel, like you mentioned. And what transpired in that meeting is that pirtobrutinib is often an agent in absence of clinical trials that physicians reach for while considering CAR T-cell therapy, liso-cel. We do know that time to next therapy in patients with double refractory disease, while time to next therapy on pirtobrutinib is typically less than 2 years. So we do have some time to achieve a response and manage the symptoms, but it is not a cure. So considering liso-cel in that setting is something that my colleagues and I typically would do. Of course, there are some problems with liso-cel, CRS, potential neurotoxicity, risk of infections. However, I will also say that TRANSCEND-004 study, which led to liso-cel approval, was actually done in a slightly different era where all the patients who were treated with that agent had previously received chemoimmunotherapy. So many patients have received up to a dozen of therapies. So they entered the study with severe immune compromise, which may have negatively affected both the efficacy of liso-cel and potentially increased the toxicities, including infectious complications. So I do believe that in the future, we may see better tolerability and efficacy of liso-cel in patients who have not had multiple chemo lines in the past. So I do think it's a very good option. We have also discussed what kind of strategies might be employed to improve efficacy and safety of liso-cel in patients with CLL. And they could include some prophylactic measures for CRS. They could include combination studies with BTK inhibitors, which some early data is interesting, demonstrating some increased efficacy as well as improved toxicity profile. So there are some additional strategies that we could deploy over the next few years to help improve outcomes in patients with CLL.
Moving on to diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, the FDA also approved several CAR T therapies there, but bridging therapies are necessary to control disease progression. So how is this approached prior to selecting CAR T cell therapy?
Yeah, so the approved CAR T-cell therapy are all CD19 based, and this is another area which is evolving. There is certainly very good data by now that bendamustine-based therapies negatively impact efficacy of subsequent CAR T-cell therapies in DLBCL. So at this point, we try to avoid bendamustine. And as you know, bendamustine and, say, polatuzumab combination has been approved in relapsed refractory setting in DLBCL and has become a somewhat widely used regimen. However, when thinking of CAR T-cells, cannot be recommended for these patients because of the bendamustine immunosuppressive T-cell suppressive effects. There is another consideration of whether to use CD19 targeted therapies in patients who are planning to undergo CAR T. And, there is some evidence that there may be potentially CD19 loss following CD19 targeting therapies. However, the data in this space is very limited, and actually the data that we have so far is fairly encouraging, where patients who have received loncastuximab, for example, or tafasitamab, actually still did well with CAR-T. In fact, there is some interesting data with tafasitamab suggesting that tafasitamab pretreatment prior to CAR-T cell therapy may actually increase CAR-T cell efficacy due to more measured, more regulated, or rather slow onset of CAR-T cell expansion. So there is a lot of work that needs to be done there still. What is the best bridging regimen prior to CD19 CAR-T cell therapy? I think the only area where there is no longer so much controversy is, well, we should avoid bendamustine. But in terms of CD19 targeting antibodies or immunotherapeutic agents, there is still a lot of work that needs to be done.
And then what are some essential factors to consider for treatment sequencing in DLBCL, and how is this navigated?
We have very good agents in therapy of DLBCL now. Like I mentioned, CAR-T cells, bispecific antibodies, CD19 targeted therapies. In terms of sequencing, there is now an emerging question whether we should be using bispecifics first, CAR-T cells first. I think some of this will be driven by logistical issues. Some of this will be driven by whether there is easy accessibility to a tertiary care center that can perform CAR-T cell therapy, where the patient can actually get to that center easily. Some of this will be driven by patient comorbidities, some by cost and other factors. But there is now emerging data as well that in DLBCL that bispecific antibodies do work pretty well after CAR T cell therapies and patients who fail CAR T, and also vice versa, patients who fail bispecific antibodies may still respond to CAR T cell therapy, provided that this antigen is still expressed that are being targeted by, say, bispecific antibodies CD20, which most of these bispecific antibodies target now, at least the ones which are approved. So there is still a lot of debate in terms of what is the best approach. Of course, CAR-T cells have been approved some time ago, and we have very good data, particularly in patients with primary refractory diffuse large B-cell lymphoma who relapse early after initial chemoimmunotherapy, that CAR-T cells essentially are replacing autologous stem cell transplant in that space. They have been well studied in that space. But in later lines of therapy, I think we'll see some emerging data in favor of both. It's important to know that there are many agents that are being developed now that we may not necessarily have talked about, which are anticipated to further shift the paradigm and treatment of lymphoid malignancies. So, for example, in targeted therapy space, we have a whole class of agents called BTK degraders, which are showing very high efficacy in chronic lymphocytic leukemia and some indolent lymphomas as well. In cell therapy space, we have novel targets for CAR-Ts, for example, buffer receptor targeting CAR-T cells, dual antigen targeting CAR-T cells. We have allogeneic CAR-T cells as an emerging field. And bispecific antibodies, same thing. Most of them target CD20, like I said, but there are also now CD19 targeting bispecific antibodies in development, which show very high preliminary efficacy. So I think we will see a lot of new drugs in the next 10 years, which will generate even more questions in terms of both sequencing and best approach to minimize toxicities in patients with lymphoid malignancies.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, please be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you can get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thank you again for listening to OncLive On Air.